Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 23 for November the 19th, 2013. I'm your host, Jack, and I'll be helping you to travel into your server room and go to all edges of your network. Together, we shall keep on keeping on and keep on learning. If you get a chance, please check out my website, and that website is tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can also comment on the shows there, and I would appreciate it if you would do so. Also, you can leave me voicemail at 724-701-0911 or email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that's at Technoman, T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N, Technoman. Please sign up on the website for future newsletters. You can do that at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. I see a few of you already have, and I appreciate that. I haven't even made that open out there yet to folks, but I see that you already have started signing up, and I really do appreciate that. And I'm hoping to switch that over soon to a program called MailChimp, which allows me to actually communicate even a little bit better with everybody. But that is a start right now. So go ahead and sign up for that particular newsletter. And your email addresses, as always, is safe with me. I just keep those so we can talk back and forth. In this show tonight, I thought what I would do is I'm going to walk you through some command line tools that will help you with connectivity issues, some networking issues. And so many people out there these days are so afraid of the command line. You know, folks, that's where I started. And you know from past shows, I started in all this computer stuff where probably a lot of you might have done so back with DOS. And I lived through the, you know, the Windows NT for work groups, the Windows NT 3.5, 4.0. And we did a lot more with the command line than what is really done today. And I don't know why we got away from that, but it's always good to get back to those grassroots, to get back to that part where you can use the command line to figure things out. And, you know, I know there's a lot of tools out there you can buy, and it always, it's something that I always look at and kind of get a little chuckle out of. Because if you know the command line tools, you don't have to buy the GUI interface tools. Just open a command window and type the tools in. It's going to do the same thing for you, give you the same information back, you know, more in a command line type environment, like an ANSI type environment. You're not going to have the pretty graphics maybe that you have from a program, but you're still going to get that same information that you need. And I think that is the vital part. That's what we're shooting for here. So tonight we're going to be going through the command lines here and some tools that I like to use, maybe even a couple here that I don't use anymore that I stumbled upon. And if you're looking for these and you said, well, Jack, I'm driving in my car, I can't remember all this, I can't write it down, because I know when I listen to podcasts myself, I like to take notes. But I'm going to put the link with this show. So if you go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, you'll see on there episode number 23, it'll say command line tools, and underneath of, or right before the audio track, there will be a link, and that will take you to the exact website that I am using to talk to you this evening about these tools. Let me switch over here now, and we're going to start talking about these tools, and we're going to go through these. And some of these you might already be using. I know we use some of these all the time in our network, and when I have new interns coming through from local colleges, I push these command line tools because a lot of the colleges do not. The colleges don't want to go into this. Well, that's kind of old school. Well, if you don't know the old school, then you can't do the new school, right? And I believe that makes better technicians out there, better service people, is when we get people come in for interviews, even for jobs, and I say, well, what, or how, this is one of my questions for a job. How long have you been working around computers? And if you tell me, I just started looking at computers when I picked up my first college book, that's probably not the guy that I'm going to hire. The guy that I want to hire is somebody that says, well, I used to build computers when I was, 14. People around around home, mom and grandma would call, and I'd go to their house and work on their computers and clean them up and clean the viruses. And that's the people I want to talk to, because hands-on and learning from the grassroots up is where you want to go. You don't want to start somewhere in the middle. That just doesn't work. Try to learn history and start in the middle of the creation of man. You're not going to ever figure it out, right? So we are going back to grassroots tonight. That's what I'm saying, and we're going to get started here. The first we're going to talk about is the almighty and all-knowing ipconfig. That's ipconfig. Now, we use this a lot of times because we want to walk up to a computer, and I know you can go through the networking properties. You can right-click and go to properties and network management. You can see what your IP address is. But if you open a command prompt, just go to the run command, type in cmd, hit the enter key. That will bring you up to the command prompt. Type in ipconfig, enter, and it's going to give you your IP address and a couple other little bit of information there. But if you type ipconfig space / ALL, it's going to give us a raft of information. We use this primarily whenever we're looking for, one, to make sure that the computer is properly picking up DNS, and we want to make sure that it is properly picking up an IP address from the actual DHCP server. So we use ipconfig space / ALL. It also gives us the MAC address, which if we're reserving IP addresses, which we talked about, I believe, on a previous show when we were setting up DHCP, we can reserve an IP address by using that MAC address. And then we know that computer always gets the exact same IP. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It also tells us if it's hitting the proper DHCP server, the proper one that we want it to hit. It's looking at the primary and the secondary WINS servers. If you have WINS servers on your networks, we don't really do that a whole lot anymore, but you may, in fact, have that. So it gives you a lot of information. Now, what else can you do with ipconfig? Well, we also use it when we do an ipconfig space / and that's a forward / renew. Now, what that's going to do is renew actual go out. Now, there's a couple things to remember about. A lot of people get confused with this renew. Renew is going to renew that the TCP IP snack, stack, the TCP IP stack. It's going to renew that, refresh it. But if you have a reservation set in for your physical address, for your MAC address, you're going to pick up the same IP address because that's the way it's set to work. Also, a lot of the guys that we get in don't understand that our DHCP server has a life to live, and we set that at, I believe, 6 hours at this point. Some businesses set theirs at, 10 days or whatever. But that every time that computer sees or that DHCP server sees that MAC address, it's going to hand it that same IP address that it already had. So all you're doing basically is refreshing the TCP IP stack at that point. Now, you can also do an ipconfig forward / release. Make sure you put that space in there, space forward / release. That's going to release it and zero everything out. When you do an ipconfig, you'll find that you have nothing listed in there. There'll be no IP addresses. There'll be no DHCP address. There'll be no DNS numbers. Everything will be zeros. Then you can do your renew and pick everything back up. But if you do a renew, it does a release first, and then it does a renew. So hopefully that kind of makes sense to you there. Put that into perspective. And I tell my folks to go out and try this stuff out. You're not going to hurt anything. Open, you're sitting at your desk in your office. Now make sure naturally you're not connected to anything on your network. You're not running any, tools or anything against your network. But by all means, open a command prompt up and do this stuff on your computer at work and get used to this stuff. Get used to using these tools. And then I use Evernote a lot and have it on all my devices. You can even take this website and post it into your Evernote, and then you have it whenever you need any of these tools. You'll have those fresh for you, and that'll be little tools in your little digital tool bag, I call it. All right, now there's also the repair feature that can renew the LAN or high-speed internet connections IP settings. And that's, again, is ipconfig space repair. And that will repair everything. And this is what it repairs. It checks whether the DHCP is enabled and, if enabled, issues a broadcast renew and it refreshes the IP address. It can also flush out the ARP cache, the ARP cache. It flushes the NetBIOS cache. It flushes your DNS cache. It re-registers with WINS. And more importantly, it re-registers with DNS. Now, you can also re-register with DNS. And this is very critical because sometimes we will have a computer. And this is how you know if your computer is registered with your DNS properly or not. Open up a command line and simply type in ping, P-I-N-G, space, and then type in the computer name of the computer you want to contact. If that computer does not respond to you, then you might want to re-register it with the DNS services. So all you have to do is do an ipconfig space slash register DNS, and that will re-register you into the DNS server and get that DNS to see that computer once again. Sometimes they fall off the network, not too often, but it is something that you might want to remember and, again, have that in your digital tool bag. Now, I talked about ping, and this is to test your connectivity to your network. Now, most people will not tell you, but when you're doing ping, and a lot of our new guys coming in say, look, Jack, I pinged the firewall. It's not getting there. I pinged the DNS server. It's not seeing that. I pinged HBO.com, just an address we use on the internet. It's not being able to go out on the internet. There's something really, really drastically wrong. They want to go in there and they want to reload the operating system and rebuild the computer. I said, well, did you ping the local loopback? And they say, well, Jack, what do you mean local loopback? Because this is stuff, again, you know, whenever you're going through your training, whenever you're going through schooling for networking and stuff, you're almost always taught to look at the big picture. What could be wrong in the world? Not what can be wrong locally. Sometimes we got to pull that back. We have to look locally. And in our network, we service a network with a lot of students, a student body. And I teach my people, you even need to pull it back from the computer a little bit. One time we had a network that dropped and, you know, I sent three different people in there and they couldn't figure it out. Everything they did wasn't working. They couldn't ping. It said the network cable was not working right. They checked the switch. They checked all this big, big stuff. I went in and here, what happened was one of the student body pulled the networking cable out of the wall, just enough where it looked like it was plugged in, but I went over and I jiggled it and it fell on the floor. I plugged it back in. It was good to go. Now, with that said, the first thing you should do if you have a networking issue on a local machine is ping the local loopback. So you do a ping space 127.0.0.1. If you're not familiar with that address, write that down in your little smartphone or somewhere in your notes, that is the local loopback address for every computer that you will find. 127.0.0.1. So it's the international loopback address, I guess you could call that. I don't know that for sure, but you can use that if you wish. You can also do ping, and then you can do the IP address of the local host, which that is the local host. Next, we ping the default gateway. So the default gateway is the furthest point on your network before you hit the internet. And then we do a ping remote host. Okay, so that is the HBO.com I use. You can use Disney.com. Anything that you know is pretty stable out there on the internet and will give you a, you know, pretty rapid response back to you. So that's why we pick those big companies. Now, if you cannot ping successfully, then the computer needs to be restarted. Then you need to restart that TCP IP once again and get that TCP IP stack back in order and working once again. Try that. Usually reboot the computer fixes almost, 98% of everything out there. So now when you ping, what are you looking for? And there's one thing we do ping. If we're looking at a connectivity issue, if you have somebody out there, just to tell you briefly how to use this tool, not just about the tool. Sometimes we have folks on our network, they'll call us out. It can be one of the furthest points of our network. So maybe we're going through two hops of fiber, and maybe we're going through a couple switches, maybe we're popping through a couple VLANs. We go out to their network and we sit down with them. And what they want to do is they say, look, every so often our network just seems to drop. It seems to say no connection. It seems to be dropping out. Something happens and a web page doesn't show up. So you're thinking in your mind a packet could be dropping. The user, they don't know what you're talking about. So just go with it. So what you want to do then is do a ping the IP address space and do a slash T. When you do a slash T, it will continually ping. If you just do a ping, it'll give you four responses. Good, 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 done. And it'll tell you the milliseconds time and time to live equals, and it'll tell you what that is when it's hitting through your network. But if you put that slash T on there, you can sit and now watch it. And you can watch ping, ping, ping. So we watched it one day. It was 1 millisecond, 1 millisecond, 1 millisecond, 1 millisecond, 9 milliseconds, 1 millisecond, 1 millisecond. 10. So there was something causing that packet to get into a collision somewhere down the line is what we believed. And we did, in fact, find out that is what it was. We moved them. We put them on a whole nother separate fiber switch, and we have them going fiber to the main hub or the main switches. I don't like to say hubs. Sometimes I call my cupboards or central locations, you know, the central hub, but it's not a hub. We have all switching. And we send it back to another switch, and we controlled that circuit a little bit better. And now we have a constant 1 millisecond ping. But again, it's one of those tools to see, am I dropping packets anywhere along my network? Another tool that I like to use that a lot of people don't use is called NBSTAT. Now I'm going to give you a couple of these, and I'm going to tell you what they're used for. And again, you need to take these tools and play with these tools, okay? Because what I'm giving you a path to your network. And especially if you're not a network administrator and you're learning about this server stuff and you're learning about networks and you're trying to get your head wrapped around it. But also if you're that accidental techie in that office, you may be an accountant, you know, a school-trained accountant, but you know, you told them, hey, I really like Excel. They know you're really good at it. And they say, hey, why don't you go ahead and run our server for us because we don't want to hire a tech guy. And you're like, well, yeah, you can do that. I want to give you some tools, again, in your digital tool belt that you can actually use. So let's talk about NBSTAT. It's actually NBTSTAT. And this is for NetBIOS naming and NetBIOS over TCP/IP. That's where they get the NetBT. So the first one is NBTSTAT space dash N. This displays the names that were registered locally on the system by programs such as servers and redirectors. Next, we have NBTSTAT space slash C. This shows the NetBIOS name cache, which contains name to address mapping for other computers. The next one is NBTSTAT space dash capital R. Purges the name cache, and it reloads it from the LM host file. And if you're not using LM host file, we'll have to talk about that one night because that's a great way to make your network connectivity so much faster. You would not believe the speed differences, and we'll talk about that some night. The next one is NBTSTAT space dash capital R capital R. Releases the NetBIOS names registered with the WIN server and then renews their registration. So if you're using WINs, that can help you out. NBTSTAT space dash A. The name performs a NetBIOS adapter status command against the computer specified by name. The adapter status command returns the local NetBIOS name table and the computer plus media access control address of the adapter. Long-winded, basically, it performs a NetBIOS adapter status change or re-change for the NetBIOS. NBTSTAT space dash capital S list the current NetBIOS sessions and their status, including statistics, as shown in the example. And again, this link is on the show notes. And by show notes, I simply mean I don't usually get big winded into show notes for the show, but I do have the link at the show. So if you go over to tipsfromtheserverroom.com, look at the show you're currently listening to, and the link for this will be there so you can check out these pictures. They have examples. Now, displaying connection statistics by using netstat. Now, remember, we're just using nbtstat, and all these commands, and this is hard for my new guys, especially my young guys coming in, and they don't have a lot of command line training. They don't understand a lot of the command line stuff. I put them through these paces. I put them in the command lines because if you want to impress an end user, sit at their computer, open up a command prompt, full screen it, and start typing in commands. And the biggest one that impresses most people is the ping space, the IP address with a slash T, and they see all those things, but they're, oh my. And you just tell them, you know, we are deep into your computer. And they're just blown away. They think that's the greatest thing ever. Let's go through some of the netstat commands, because netstats are wonderful commands, and they sell a lot of programs out there that do these with the GUI interface, and, you know, they say, hey, you know, you need to buy this program. It's $3,000, and you're like, oh, great, I need to know this. It's in the command line. And do you ever remember that old commercial? It's in there. Well, it's built into your Windows. So at the command prompt, so we have the C prompt going on. You type in netstat space dash E. This gives you your interface statistics. So it tells you how many bits and bytes were received and sent. It tells you unicast packets. It tells you non-unicast packets, discards, errors, and also unknown protocols. Now let's talk about netstat space dash N space dash O. This shows us all active connections. Now, if you think your computer is infected in any way at all, what you want to do is run this because it's going to show you your local address and it's going to show you your foreign address. So what it's doing here, this is a nice program or a nice way to see what connections your computers are making to the outside world. So if you think a computer has spyware on it or something going on with it, you don't need a major program to see this stuff. We don't need to capture packets and spend hours and days looking through logs. Simply do this at the computer you think is the culprit to maybe being a spam bot. Maybe it's just, you know, taking over and it's acting as a drone on the internet. Do that. Netstat space dash N space dash zero and look at those active connections and see that you can determine them. It'll have the PID on there. Take those PIDs and throw them into Google, do searches, and you can probably figure out pretty much what those services are, and you'll see what they're connecting to. All right, let's move on and move up. The next one is netstat space dash A. This again shows you active connections. It shows you your local addresses, and it will show you its foreign address counterpart and show you the state, established, or whichever. This is a little bit different than the dash N dash O because the dash N dash O gives you the PID and it shows you the actual IP addresses. This is showing you here the port addresses. Ports are very important because if you know what ports are opening and closing and you have a problem, you can use this and then you can go to your firewall and you can close that port and shut them down. I had to do it on my network once because we had a couple machines. Now, granted, we have 700 nodes on our network. Now, if you're going to go out to 700 computers, some of those are laptops and carts and whatever out there, and you're going to find that machine that's acting as a spam bot. It's pretty hard to find that machine. Now, I'm sure you can run tools, and we ran packet sniffers and everything, trying to figure out which machine is sending this traffic. But until you do that, I had to shut down the email getting pushed out. Most services, the SMTP port or the outgoing email is port 25, Whenever anybody's going to attack your network, they're going to try to push out port 25 because it's the most common. So what I did, I went to my firewall, my corporate firewall, my Cisco, and I went there and there, I gave it the whole address, the whole banks of all the addresses and said, look, deny outgoing SMTP port 25. And I shut it down. So it hit my firewall and it just couldn't get out on the internet. My internet provider was extremely pleased that I was able to do that so rapidly. And we don't use port 25 to send email because we've been using Google Apps forever. And, you know, everything of ours goes through Google Apps. So we don't need port 25 on our network. And that's a problem, folks. If you're running Microsoft Exchange in your network and you're running port 25, I would suggest changing your email outgoing SMTP server to something other than port 25 and shut down port 25 on your firewall. That's just my suggestion. You're gonna let yourself sleep a lot easier at night, and you'll be a lot more comfortable when you go on vacations, not worrying about that silly port 25 that you don't need that somehow became a international standard for email. So the bottom line is what I'm trying to tell you is keep that port 25 shut off. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about is netstat space dash s. This gives you your IP statistics, and it tells you your packets received, received header errors, received address errors. Folks, this is amazing, this tool, because if you're having trouble, as I told you earlier, about dropping packets, this is immediately what I would do next, is I would run this and try to see how many packets am I dropping. You shouldn't be really dropping anything. You may have some header errors occasionally with a packet, but those packets should be pretty much zero across the board, except for received and sent. And I have a lot of people call me and say, Jack, my receipt packets are not the same as my sent. They're not going to ever match up because the computer's sending different packets and is receiving different packets, and that's okay. It also gives you your ICMP statistics. So it'll say messages sent, messages received. So that's something else you'd have there. Also some TCP statistics. Active opens, passive opens, failed connections attempts. Another big thing to watch is failed connection attempts. If you're sending out packets, if you're sending out active open packets of 500 or so, and you have 400 of those failed, guess what? You have a lot of dropped packets somewhere. You have a problem with a switch or a network cable or something major is going on. These are just great tools. Again, very easy. They're fast. That's all. Like, I type it in, boom, I got some information I need to start working on my network. The next thing we're going to talk about is traceroute. Traceroute is wonderful to know how many switches you're going through, how many hops you're getting from one point to the other. That's what we're doing. We're tracing a route. So to do traceroute at the command prompt, it's just T-R-A-C-E-R-T. Trace, it's T-R-A-C-E, then R-T for route, all ran together, space. Then give it an IP address and a dash D. Now what that's going to do is it's going to give you a traceroute back, and I said it's going to show you the amount of hops, and it's going to show you if it has a dramatic bunch of hops. We use this basically for outside. When we have somebody calls up and says, look, we can't get to this website, whatever the website is, and we want to find out where is it bouncing to, what path is it taking to get there, and it gives us a little bit of data to kind of collect to help that person get to that particular website. You can also use it to see just how many hops maybe you have through switches through your network to get back to your central servers. I mean, that's just another way you can use traceroute. Now, there is some options with traceroute. So traceroute space with a dash D specifies the IP addresses that are not resolved to host names. The dash S will tell you about maximum hops, specifies the number of hops to allow in tracing a route to the host named in the target name. Dash J, it specifies a list of router interfaces in the path taken by the traceroute utility. So again, this is router interfaces, not just switches and networking gear, but the routers that it's actually seeing. Dash W, and that will show the weights, the number of milliseconds specified to timeout for each reply. So how long it will wait, and what it would be is dash W space, and then you give it a time to wait. And remember, that's in milliseconds. So many people think that's in seconds. most networking issues and most networking computer problems or most networking accessibilities, we do in milliseconds, MS. We don't do in seconds. That's an eternity. 1 second is an eternity. Just check out your internet speed. Do a check out internet speed test and do a speed check of your internet connectivity. The first thing it gives you back is a ping time, and that ping time is in milliseconds. So that is very, very critical. The last thing is a trace route space target name. You can name or IP address of the target host. And again, when you do that, that's the way we use it most of the time. It'll show us that number of hops it's getting to get to that particular location. So again, very, very nice tools to use. The next thing we're going to tell you about here, just to go through some of this here, is path ping. Not too many people use path ping. It's not something used, but it's very, very useful. And again, that digital tool belt has to stay full because we need our tools just as much as a plumber needs a pipe wrench, just as much as a mechanic needs, you know, a crescent wrench or whatever the mechanic uses, socket wrenches or whatever. We as technologists have to have our tools. So path ping space dash N is host names. It does not resolve the addresses to the host names, but it resolves the host names. Okay, the next one here is dash H, and that shows us the maximum hops to separate or to search for the target, the maximum number of hops. The next one is dash G, and this will show lose the source route along the host list. Dash P, the number of milliseconds to wait between pings. Dash Q is the timeout. Waits this many milliseconds for each reply. Now remember, these are commands that you're adding to your path ping. The next one is dash I, use a specified source address. Dash number 4 is for IPv4, force path ping to use IPv4, and dash 6 naturally would be IPv6. Now, I don't know what you're using your network. I'd like for some people to respond out there. And I did get some great responses to some of these shows, but most of them, I know you're listening out there because I look at the stats and we can see folks who are listening to the shows. But I don't get a lot of responses. I do want your responses back with IPv6 and IPv4. Primarily, well, no, let's say 100% right now, we are using IPv4. I would like to hear from you if you're using IPv6. I know that I believe Google and another company, I think it was Disney, was looking at switching over to IPv6. So they have more IPs to use on their network. And it might have been Rackspace might have been doing it also. I can't remember for sure. But do you use IPv6? Do you see a great benefit for using IPv6? I think most of us at this point in our lives get away with IPv4. It's very familiar. We've been set up with IP4 for forever, right? Ever since we've been doing the internet. When I first ran my internet business, we never could have imagined the amount of IP addresses, routable IP addresses in the world today, and the number of those being used. And I guess at some point they are going to get used up. That's the whole thing. Right now they're getting very scarce. If you call your upstream internet provider and say, I want to buy or I need routable IP addresses, you have to go through a lot to get those. Back when I owned our internet service, we'd call them. We'd say, hey, we want a Class C network or Class A. Here you go. Here's your addresses. We didn't have any trouble at all. And our upstream provider at that point, I believe, was Sprint. And Sprint would just hand these things out like they were candy canes at Christmas. They would just give you the IP addresses. Today, it almost takes an act of Congress to get a subnet of a Class C, to get something subnetted down. You want like 6 routable IP addresses. You have to really go through a lot. So is IPv6 something you're looking at? Maybe your network's not big enough. I know we run a Class A internal IP scheme of IP4. And when I first took over this network, I thought, wow, that's unmanageable. But after running it for 2 years, I've been there now for 10, but my first 2 years, I found that that was the proper way to go. You should have a Class A network because we have so many devices. I don't have to worry about running out of IPs. I did subnet them down internally, just to make it manageable for me to know what goes where and you know what's on what part of the network. But the overall, if you look at my firewall, I am starting at a Class A network, and then I branch that out. So it makes sense. But IPv4, I don't think I'll ever, unless I'm pushed to go to 6. So I want to know about you. Are you going to 6? Are you at 6? Is there a benefit? And I'd like to hear from you guys out there, because I'm sure there's a lot of great, great networking people, very intelligent networking people out there, play a lot more skills with IPv6 than what I have. And I want to know from you, because you are the resident expert. I say it's the one thing about these shows when you're a podcaster like I am here, is we are not the all-knowing, the all-great grand poobah of what we talk about. We are people that try to pay it forward. We are people that try to bring information to you. But we also, in return, I think we're seeking information. Because when I prepare for these shows, I am constantly relearning. And that's the same way that I still enjoy very much taking interns into our network, because it allows us to keep going back to the basics and relearning that basics. Because as we do this, I mean, I've been doing this stuff, and you folks know, you've probably heard me say this many times. The better part of 23 years or so, I guess, I say 25, but... And what we did back then, we may not do today, unless we have a chance to bring like this show to you today about command line tools. Even though I use them every day, it's not something that, you know, I go back and revisit and say, oh, I could use that switch somewhere. So we pay it forward. I ask you to pay it forward, because this is not something, we're not reinventing networking here. We're not reinventing the Cogswell cog by any chance. If you ever watched the Jetson years ago, you know, it was one of the things on our Cogswell cog. And what I tell everybody is we have to share information between each other, especially when you're in this line of work, computers, networking. And I know a lot of people say, well, Jack, you know, because I do consulting work, and they say, well, Jack, if you tell somebody else about how to do networking, they could take your consulting job. Well, that's not really the case, because I know that those folks, I know their network, I know their servers, I have things set up the way I want to do business with them. And I don't think anybody wants to take your job, but if you share your information with somebody else, that's bonus. So if you share those comments back with me on the show, and then I could do like I did last week with Mike and share his thoughts back out to you, that's him paying it forward. And I want you to pay it forward also. So put the comments on there. It'd be really, really great to see. And that's also why I created these online courses I do, because that allows me to go back and rethink things. And when something new comes out, like Windows Server, I get to dig into there and pull it apart and build a course. And that's a wonderful way for me to keep up on my skills and a way for me to bring it and pay it forward to you. So folks, once again, I want to thank you so much for joining me here on Tips from the Server Room. This show, I created this a long time ago, and then I kind of pushed it to the side a little bit. And then I came back. I thought, you know what? We came back really strong, too. We've been in a positive movement here. And if you've been following the show, you know that we are here every Tuesday night producing this show and bringing new topics to you each and every week. And, you know, getting that feedback is positive. It's not even, and my wife often says, oh, you're getting a pat on the back. That's not even really it. We just know that you're listening, or I know that you are tuning in saying, hey, that's pretty cool. I enjoy you doing the shows, and that's great. So with that said, if you want to learn more, I talked to you a little bit about building these courses and how I built these courses. I get to tear Windows Server apart, and I get to get in there and get dirty with it and build a course for you that makes sense. So if you want to learn about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, which a lot of you are going to move to, you know, you're going to be pushed into that at some day. 2008 R2 is going to be around for a long, long time. But if you do want to move up and get pushed into 2012, that course is there. As long as also with VMware ESXi, now we're on version 5.5. ESXi is now on 5.5. So if your servers aren't up to date, go to VMware, sign in, and download the new 5.5. Remember, ESXi is free. Now, my training may not be, because I want to teach you, you know, the nuts and bolts of it. But if you want to learn these from A to Z, so it's install to administering and everything in between, sign up for one of the online courses at our website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the webpage. Now, these courses are self-paced. You watch a video and you take a quiz. And a lot of people are so concerned about that, Jack. I haven't taken quizzes for decades. That's okay. These are written. I wrote these just to make sure you're getting the information. These quizzes are mainly written just to kind of reinforce the information in your brain to say, oh, I did hear that on that video, or I did see him, what he did on there. And the quiz will ask you questions about the video. So it's only two or three questions, folks. It's not like a high school quiz where it's like 20 or 100 questions on there. I wouldn't do that to you. So it's very easy quizzes. Once you complete the overall course, I mail you a certificate, which a lot of people have responded and said, Jack, you know, these certificates have gotten us jobs. I mean, they put them with their resume, and it tells the employer that you understand Windows Server and you want to take over their servers or help with their upgrades of Windows 2008 R2 to Windows Server 2012, and they're ready to do that. Or they want to virtualize. So many people are still virtualizing today, and you will know how to do that. So sign up for those courses today, and you want to do it at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. I'd really appreciate it if you did. If nothing else, remember I said earlier about the future newsletters. I don't know what I'll be typing up, but by all means, if you want to get in on that, just throw your email address on the little form there at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Remember, today's link will be with this show. I'll definitely put it on there on the website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You'll see it. So you'll see the episode number 23 down below, the little write-up about, you know, what today's show is about. There'll be a link, and go there for all these great command line tools and have that in your Evernote for future reference. So folks, have a great, great work week. Thank you so much for being here with me each and every week for Tips from the Server Room. I enjoy doing these. I hope you enjoy listening to them. I know sometimes they get long-winded, but hopefully I'm not too monotone. Sometimes you get that on these podcasts, you know, today you will be learning about, and I hope that's not the case. I hope you're able to follow along, kind of enjoy. We try to have fun with you here on the shows and make it as upbeat as, you know, networking can possibly be. So until next Tuesday night, have a great work week. Take the very best care of yourself, you know, mentally and physically. That's very important. I'll see everybody back here next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long, have a good evening, and so long from now from Tips from the Server Room Central and Jack. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.